ShareCare, helping you get younger, get guidance, get better care, get smart, get fit. Radio MD presents ShareCare Radio with Daria Long Gillespie, MD.
Hi, welcome to ShareCare Radio. I'm Dr. Daria. Let's dive into the health news for this week. First articles we're going to be discussing is about helmets and the prevention of concussions. So that was from a new study conducted by Florida's Brains, Inc. and presented at the American Academy of Neurology. Now, they tested four different sporting technologies targeting football helmets that are sold on the premise of reducing head injuries. Now, they look specifically at concussions. Now, a concussion is a traumatic brain injury, or TBI, and it can be caused by a bump, a blow, or any jolt to the head, or a blow to the body that causes the head and the brain inside it to move rapidly back and forth. Now, that sudden movement can cause the brain to kind of bounce around within the skull, and that can cause it to even twist, and that can cause stretching and damaging of the brain cells, which can lead to chemical changes within the brain. So researchers used a crash test dummy head and neck to simulate the head movement by modifying a standard drop test system. They place sensors in the dummy's head to measure linear and angular rotational responses to the helmet at 10, 12, and 14 miles an hour, and evaluated four football helmet add-ons that are currently on the market. Now, they showed that they were able to detect linear acceleration. Now, they reduced linear acceleration, and that is responsible for a lot of the contusion injuries we see, which are brain bruises, as well as skull fractures and general bruising of the head. But they found very little impact on angular acceleration. Now, angular acceleration is the force associated with concussions. And these researchers concluded that there's no device on the market right now that currently protects the athlete against a concussion. This is tough news for parents because many parents are very concerned about the risk of concussion in their children, especially in the setting of playing football. And this just shows some of the devices that are for sale for concussions, if anything, may give us kind of a false sense of security, but really don't provide any true protection against concussions. So again, for all parents whose children are playing football, you really have to base it on, you know, what you see, how significant that impact seems to be, and how your child is behaving and their symptoms. And really base it on that. You cannot rely on any of the devices on the market right now. Hopefully there'll be some more devices, and hopefully we'll have better news in the future. But right now, really just can't rely on them. A second one is something that's very concerning to me as a physician, and that is that hospitals are facing a growing number of active shooter threats in the United States. Now, this was kind of brought on by the most recent shooting of a surgeon in Boston on January 20th of this year, and when Dr. Michael Davidson, who's a cardiothoracic surgeon at Harvard's Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, was shot by a family member of one of his former patients. Now, they looked at this in an article in the Journal of American Medical Association, asking if, you know, thinking of our hospitals as sanctuaries, if that's really the case anymore. They looked at hospital examine their security plans and looked at some of the statistics. Now, according to a 2012 study in the Annals of Emergency Medicine, there's been an increased frequency in shootings. And in addition, in the past year leading up to this shooting, there were 14 other active shooter incidents at hospitals around the country that left 15 people dead. Now, that's been a growing trend, and by examining news accounts, the researchers in that study found that while hospitals faced about 9 active shooter incidents a year between 2000 and 2005, that rate climbed to 16.7 a year between 2006 and 2011, with 161 deaths in hospitals. Really a frightening statistic for both patients and physicians and nurses and hospital staff alone. And that rate has increased to 16.4 per year between 2007 and 2013. So hospitals have to be prepared, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is calling for better preparation on behalf of hospitals. They're looking at things like more cameras, better lighting, panic buttons, you know, well-defined evacuation plans, and even limiting the number of entrances and exits. And some hospitals even employ metal detectors and using stationed armed police within the hospital. But that really depends on the hospital. I know where I trained in New Haven, we did have a higher level of security because of the surrounding area. And it just really depends where you are. And it's impossible, as we've seen, to really be protected from every event. So it's something that the hospitals and Department of Health and Human Services are going to be looking at to find more ways that we can protect not just the staff and the physicians, but the patients themselves. Moving on to a different topic, and that is on breastfeeding and how it can help shape your immune system early in life. Now, these were from researchers at Henry Ford Hospital, and they say that breastfeeding and other factors influence a baby's immune system development and susceptibility to allergies and asthma, really by what's in their gut. So the findings came from a series of studies that they looked at childhood exposures, and they discussed further this concept of the gut microbiome. Now, what that means is that's a collection of microorganisms in our gastrointestinal or GI tract, and we have hundreds and billions of them in our systems, and they're what we call good bacteria in many cases. But this is essentially our own body's bacterial ecosystem. Researchers showed that exposures to these microorganisms in the first few months after birth can actually help stimulate the immune system, and the immune system, you know, is designed to be exposed to bacteria on a grand scale. So if you minimize those exposures, the immune system may not develop optimally. So they looked at a bunch of children at the 1 month after birth and 6 months after birth, and they found that breastfeeding babies at 1 month and 6 months had distinct microbiome compositions compared to non-breastfed babies. And they thought that that may influence their immune system development and that they may be at decreased risk of developing allergies to pets and potentially decreased risk of asthma. They also found that, you know, the baby's gut microbiome may vary by the mother's race and ethnicity, the baby's gestational age at birth, so how far along in their pregnancy was a mother when the baby was born, postnatal and prenatal exposure to tobacco smoke, which we know has a huge impact, and even whether they were delivered by C-section or vaginal delivery, and the presence of pets in the home. So again, exposure to higher and more diverse environmental bacteria and specific gut bacteria seem to boost the immune system's protection against allergies and asthma. Now, another study came out. Now, this is bad news for someone like myself. I admit I like to add salt to my food, but I'm really going to have to be more careful now because a recent study from the University of Delaware College of Health Sciences and Christiana Care Health System suggested that even in the absence of an increase in blood pressure, excess dietary sodium can adversely affect organs, including the blood vessel, heart, kidneys, and brain. So it used to be thought that if your blood pressure is okay, you probably don't need to limit your salt as much. But this study is really suggesting otherwise. Now, this paper was called Dietary Sodium and Health, More Than Just Blood Pressure, and published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. And they explained that, you know, a wide variation in how people respond to salt had led them to think that some people were potentially salt resistant. But this study shows, on the other hand, that high dietary sodium can increase stiffness of your arteries as well as decreased function of your arterial lining. And that's really that lining functioning correctly is what can help prevent blockages. So you want it to function well. It can lead to enlargement of the heart muscle tissue or hypertrophy and also decreased kidney function. It may even affect your sympathetic nervous system. Now, what that means, that's your system that tells you, you know, to have that flight or fight or flight response. So what's a key takeaway is that, you know, taking the salt shaker off the table is really a good way to start and something we need to do. But it's probably also not enough. They said that approximately 70% of Americans have 70% of our sodium in our diets comes from processed foods, including items we really don't typically think of as salty, such as bread and cereals. Restaurant food, you know, it's so delicious, but it also likely is because it contains more salt in addition to more fat and other things that aren't so great for you. So eating out less can help reduce that intake. One last study that I just want to touch on today that was really fascinating, and that was that suggested there's a greater risk of developing autism may also be associated with higher intelligence or the reverse, that people with autism may have a gene for higher intelligence in general. Now, the researchers cautioned that the relationship, you know, and between autism and intelligence isn't clear, and it's probably not causative, but it's an association. Now, remember, autism is a developmental disability, and while up to 70% of people with autism may have intellectual disability, some people with the disorder have relatively normal or even above average nonverbal intelligence, and that helps them to solve complex problems using visual and hands-on reasoning skills requiring little or no use of language. So, there you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for this week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at my handle, @DrDaria. You're listening to Share Care Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for tuning in and stay well.